This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Your number is 877-217-5757. Hundreds of people filed into a Minneapolis chapel yesterday to remember George Floyd, the man whose death at the hands of a police officer opened a nationwide flood of anguish, protests, demands for change in America policy. By turn, somber and defiant, as Dion Searcy writes in the New York Times today, the mourners celebrated Floyd as a friend and father and uncle to those closest to him, but also as a victim of racial injustice whose killing had drawn a legion of people to the streets all over the country and in many parts of the world. And we're going to talk about this with Maxine Crump, the CEO of Dialogue on Race Louisiana for the last 8 years, and we're slated, things go according to plan, to hear from Jim Boren, the veteran civil rights attorney, as well. Before we go there, though, Matt Doyle, our producer of Talk Louisiana and the assistant news director for the Louisiana Radio Network, was in New Orleans last night, where an estimated 5,000 people took to the streets to give their opinion about George Floyd.
If you want peace, you better meet these motherfucking demands, because where there is no justice, there will be no peace.
Hands up, don't shoot. I can't breathe. Damn near begging for some humanity, begging for some respect, begging for the bottom line you shouldn't even have to ask for.
Grown man being murdered in the street, begging for a mama. He was calling you to get off your ass and get up.
I can't breathe.
That's how it sounded in New Orleans last night. People are on edge, and some would say for good reason. Yesterday at this time, when we were having some technical difficulties, I was describing the position of Drew Brees about kneeling to protest what happened to George Floyd and to black Americans across this country, kneeling by NFL players, and Brees said he would not respect anybody who did that. And then just a few minutes later, he issued a statement saying that he made a mistake, changed his mind, and he made a graceful apology. And, of course, some are saying he apologized because the guys who block for him, for the most part, are African-American, and the guys who catch passes for him are mostly African-Americans. But let's give him his due and say that he did apologize, and by all accounts, Drew Brees is a good person, so we'll see what happens. But that's reflective, as Maxine Crump has been with us many times, of a lot of white people, and probably yours truly, not being in touch with what's happening in the minority community. We'll never know what it's like to be black in America or anywhere else in the world. But Maxine Crump, this has brought attention to an issue that has been simmering in our country for many, many moons. What's your take on where we are now and where we go from here?
Good morning, Jim. Are you hearing me fine?
I am.
Okay, perfect. I heard you say that Drew Brees was a good person. And whether he's a good person is not even at issue. In fact, much of America has good people. And it is some of the things that happen when good people do things that they believe are right and can't see the damage and the outcome from what they believe is good. We do a series where we look back on a time when right after the civil rights law passed, after another major protest movement. And we have a film that looks at white Mississippi and how they thought about this change. And one of the things we asked the participants in the dialogue is, the film is called, and it was done by NBC Television in 1965. And they asked white people in Mississippi, you know, how are they planning to respond to this new measurement? And they said that they had warm feelings toward black people and thought that they were happy as well. And so one of the questions that's asked to the participants in the dialogue is, what is the self-portrait of their community? And we ask it that way because we used to ask, what is the self-portrait of Baton Rouge? But we had people from North Carolina, Mississippi, Tennessee, and Houston in this dialogue. and New Orleans. And so their answers were that there was a lot of sentiment that's still very much like that.
All right. We're going to go to Jim Boren now. And, Jim, you've represented many African-American clients through the years, and you know the court system well as a veteran attorney who is now in his eighth decade. He crossed the 70 barrier last year, I believe, but been around a long time, seen a lot of things. Are things better or are things still pretty much in which if you're an African-American, you're at a great disadvantage in the courtroom or anywhere else in this country?
Thank you for asking me to be on the show, Jim. Thank you very much. You know, I think that things have improved. When I began as a defense lawyer in 1976, prosecutors called my clients the N-word in open court. Judges asked me if I was, and I mean no disrespect by this, but they would say, Mr. Boren, are you representing N-words or queers today? And so that was the judiciary. It wasn't 10 years ago that the chief of narcotics of the Baton Rouge District Attorney's Office had a Confederate battle flag in his law office. And when you would, in his office, in the DA's office, and when you would go there to negotiate on behalf of black clients, of which that's a large portion of the people in criminal justice, you know, and advocating on behalf of a black man who was facing 99 years in prison, with a prosecutor who was proudly adorning a Confederate battle flag, it was uncomfortable and awkward.
Who was this individual?
Charles Gray was the prosecutor. He retired. He was and just to follow up on what she was saying a minute ago, what Charles was a man that was actually reasonable, but he denigrated black people and women and the LGBT community by making jokes about them, and was confronted by a group of us when he decided he wanted to run for judge. And we said, we can't possibly support you as long as you have this Confederate flag. And he decided not to run for judge.
My goodness. Tom in Woodland Ridge. Tom, good morning. You're on with Jim Boren and Maxine Crump.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Maxine. Ms. Crump, first of all, thank you so much for your beautiful letter to the editor a couple of days ago in the newspaper. Right on target.
All right, what's your question, Tom?
Yes. Isn't it frustrating that so much of America cannot see the issue beyond George Floyd and somehow associates looters with demonstrators but can see the difference between a few good cops and a few bad cops?
All right, Maxine, would you respond, please?
Yes, that's the point I was making, that even Jim is making as well, even with the changes we see that we like to celebrate, and in dialogue we always celebrate because we ask people, what do you see that's something to celebrate now? That's in every dialogue we ask that. And so the issue of good people and improvement, all of those things are true. The people who are protesting because so much is still the same. It will remain being the same as long as we have a structured system of racism that we haven't dismantled.
T-Bob in Panama City. T-Bob, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Well, actually, Jim, I called specifically for Smiley.
All right, well, Smiley will be later, so we'll hold you. Call back when Smiley's on. I tell you, people sometimes aren't listening. They just want to get in on the air. So we hope to hear from you later, T-Bob. But Maxine, I wanted you to finish your thought about how this is something that's gaining a lot of attention, but it may not last. We move on from crisis to crisis in this country. Do you think this is going to have staying power?
Yes. To what degree, I don't know. But already there are people in the protest and that are asking themselves questions because they feel like they can't not. There are a lot of white people who are asking themselves deeper questions because they feel like they have to. There are businesses that are reassessing themselves. We have been called to create a survey for companies to assess themselves in terms of where their biases are, because a lot of it's subtle and not very clear.
Jim, does Maxine have a cogent point as to where we are and that we have many more miles to travel?
You know, I want to go back to that question about what's the difference between a few bad cops and a few bad protesters, because I've heard some conversations about that lately. And what I suggested was that that you write a letter to the families of the officers, of the police officers who have been killed or injured lately, and say, I'm terribly sorry that that happened, and I feel your pain. But you will receive swift justice. People who kill cops get prosecuted promptly.
All right, we'll be back with Jim Boren and Maxine Crump on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us. Maxine Crump, CEO of Dialogue on Race Louisiana, veteran civil rights attorney Jim Boren, 877-217-5757 is your number. One of the headlines in the New York Times today, military vets break silence on presidents, ex-officers denounce partisan use of troops. Even Pat Robertson, the noted televangelist, is criticizing heavily the president for going this route. 877-217-5757. If you agree, disagree, or have some observation, do so. But please get to the point with Maxine and Jim. Paul in Opelousas. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning. Straight to the point. What should the police chief, aside from firing the officers, in Minneapolis do to review his troops, his officers? Thank you.
All right. What should the police chief do, Jim Boren?
That's a great question. With a really relatively simple answer, because the plans have been submitted for decades now. In addition to teaching courses on and educating your officers on race relations and how to have non-confrontational encounters with citizens of any color, but of black people in particular, they need to be enforced. I talk to police officers all the time who say that they're ashamed of things that they see, but they're afraid to step up, and they're afraid to say anything because they'll be fired by one or demoted or ridiculed. And so people who blow the whistle on abuse, on police abuse that are within the police department, need to be rewarded and encouraged to do that, and that has to come from the top. You know, it's a simple solution, but it's a start. Which is to say, we police officers will not tolerate that, and we will arrest and charge any other of my brother or sister cops who beat up people and kill them in the way we see almost every day in some state or city around the United States.
Maxine, have the police officers in Baton Rouge been to your series on Dialogue on Race Louisiana?
Yes, even the police chief and the district attorney.
Very good. Have they commented on how this may have enlightened them in some way?
Yes, they tell other people they suggest to them that the Dialogue on Race is something that helped them, and they'd like them to attend the Dialogue on Race series as well.
Mm-hmm. Many remember Maxine as a journalist, and in the journalism in COVID-19 and in this has been exceptional, and there are fewer journalists now than when Maxine and I were covering the streets of Baton Rouge in the 1980s. We probably had three times the reporters then that we have now, and that's true anywhere in the country, even at the highest levels of American journalism. And there is a story today, executives at the New York Times scrambled yesterday to address concerns of employees and readers who were angered by the newspaper's publication of an opinion essay by U.S. Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas, calling for the federal government to send the military to suppress protests against police violence in American cities. And in a videotaped opinion meeting yesterday afternoon, some of the New York Times head honchos acknowledged that they misfired on this by allowing Senator Cotton to have the most prized real estate in American journalism and to state something that is not necessarily in the mainstream of American thought. Now, editorial pages are often like that, but this is a U.S. senator basically calling for troops to enter the streets of America, federal troops, And he even compared it to Mississippi, the Ole Miss in 1962, when National Guardsmen were sent to quell protests at Oxford, Mississippi. Jim Boren, we've got people at the highest levels of government who don't have a clue, and Tom Cotton is one of those who has a great education, but apparently, and he's also a military veteran, but apparently has no knowledge of race relations in America through history.
You know, I think it's typical of a lot of people who think that a clenched fist and a gun is the way to resolve disputes rather than an open hand and an open heart and an open mind. And that's what's happening in our country right now, is I think that, and I have a great feeling of optimism despite this overwhelming depression over everything that's happening, that I think, to follow up on what Maxine was saying, is I really believe that this is a change. I believe that a lot of white folks in particular who have been kind of aware of what's going on but not paying attention to it realize, hey, this is a problem that we have to participate in solving. We can't just sit on the sidelines. We have to do something about it. And I don't think Senator Cotton and the other militaristic people that want to quell protests by guns is I think their time is limited as leaders of our country.
All right, Maxine. Should the governor of our state, he has denounced what happened to George Floyd, but should he become more active? Should he be out there marching with demonstrators? What about U.S. Senators John Neely Kennedy and William Morgan Cassidy? They've said some, but not a whole lot about what's going on. Should they be more vocal in this? What should they do?
Are you asking me?
I did ask you, yes.
Okay, that part cut out. All right. I don't have a thought about what they should do. I listen to what the demands of the protest are, and that is for systemic change. They're demanding justice and systemic change. And that's way more powerful than what any individual governor does in terms of joining the protest. I'm sure it would be helpful. But I think that the examination of our institutions is way more important. In terms of making this a change that won't require a kind of protest all over the world to keep asking America to be the America according to our founding document.
Well, Attorney General Bill Barr, he is defending the president's photo opportunity in front of a historic church amid widespread condemnation over the authorities' violent clearing of protesters and clergy from the area just before the president arrived. This is Barr. The president is the head of the executive branch and the chief executive of the nation and should be able to walk outside the White House and walk across the street to visit the church. I don't necessarily view it as a political act. I think it was entirely appropriate. Jim Boren, your thoughts? Jim, did you hear me about Attorney General
yes.
Barr?
Oh, yes. Yes. I don't even need to know. I don't know where to start with Attorney General Barr. It's not a magic trick. It's not a distraction. We all saw exactly what happened. We listened to the Episcopalian priest say that she was outside peacefully protesting and helping others with water and bandages, and that she got tear gas by the President of the United States and the Attorney General. I think that's probably the most scared I have been about the current administration since he was elected in 2016, that he's just so brazen as to use the chief law enforcement officer of the United States to tear gas and beat up American citizens so the president can do anything. You know, I don't know if he was really going over there to pray, he certainly didn't have to dislodge peaceful protesters and people of the cloth in order to do that. It's just, you know, it's terrifying to me.
Maxine, your thoughts about the Attorney General and the President using all the force at their disposal to clear the streets and have the President with a photo op, Bible in hand, outside a church?
Something happens in the turnover that I don't hear you ask for me. Is that
yes.
question you directed
yes,
to me?
I
okay.
did.
The photo op of the president, Americans have pretty much given their opinion on that. It's there are those who support President Donald Trump no matter what he does, and there are those who look at this and were horrified by it because of what he leaped over and what he took advantage of, and that it's clearly recognizing the derangement of how he operates. And this protest is not going to lift him or any of that thinking. And I think I heard Jim Bourne say something earlier that I would call, these people who think like that are going to be in the background of this country. Because if this is what America is, then a lot of us are not happy with it. And I think the majority of Americans can determine what kind of country we want to live in. And we don't want one where we have a leader that puts himself front and center.
All right. Well, we do have to roll, but thanks, Maxine. Thanks, Jim. I hope we talk again soon. We'll return with more Talk Louisiana after the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana on the 5th day of June, 2020. And yesterday was June 4th, obviously, and we were slated to hear from Smiley Gray Anders at that time, the venerable columnist for The Advocate, who has been doing his thing for 41 years as of yesterday. It was the 41st anniversary of his columns beginning. In the newspaper of record, which now has a much larger audience as far as geography, Baton Rouge, New Orleans, and parts unknown for Smiley Anders. And we're thankful that he's included us not once but twice in his column the last 2 days. And Smiley, good morning to you, and happy anniversary.
Well, thank you, Jim. I'm celebrating with our second cup of coffee.
Your second cup of coffee, and you, like many others, you're working remotely these days. How's that going? You love people. I bet this is driving you nuts.
I usually communicate a lot by email anyhow, so it hadn't really changed that much. I used to hit the bars and get a lot of information written down on cocktail napkins and stuff. But other than that, my sources are, 95% email. So they're coming in more than ever. People don't have anything to do. So they say, well, let's write what's his name and, tell a little story. And so that's it.
Well, we live in an interesting place. We know that. And many of us have been toiling in the vineyards of what is called journalism for a long time. And I consider Smiley a journalist, and he's a different kind of journalist. I consider talk show host journalists. Rush Limbaugh is a journalist, but some are better journalists than others. And Smiley, before you started writing the column, you were a beat reporter.
Yeah, I was covering business news for The Advocate, which I did for 6 years, and I assumed that was going to be my career. And then they asked me to do the column. It's just kind of an experiment to see if it worked, and evidently it's worked. So they haven't asked me to quit yet. So.
41 years, and there was a change in ownership 8 years ago, and I give John George's and Peter Kovacs credit. They were smart enough not to fool with Mother Nature.
I've been really lucky as far as ownership. We've had the Manships, of course, did a great job for years and for generations, and then Mr. George's took over, and Peter, like you said, and he's really a joy to work with. He's got the same kind of odd sense of humor that I do, so we get along very well. So, well, you've had him on before,
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
He grew up on the East Coast and came to Alabama and then to Louisiana, and he's now one of us. So, Smiley, it started for you in Natchez, Mississippi, and for those unfamiliar, your odyssey to Baton Rouge began as a young man. When did you move?
I was 8 years old, and my dad got transferred here. He was with a wholesale meat company, Swift & Company, and he got transferred, and we moved down, and went to Struma, of course, LSU, and worked in Shreveport a couple years for the Shreveport Times, doing oil and gas news, and then had a chance to come back down here doing PR for the Chamber and Farm Bureau, and then back to the Chamber. And so the Advocate hired me because strangely enough, nobody was doing business news in 73 as a separate beat. You know, just reporters would do business stories, but not as an organized section. So they asked me to start that.
All right, 877-217-5757 for Smiley. Peachy in Berkeley Hills. Peachy, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi.
Hi, Smiley. How are you? Hello?
Smiley's here. He's fine.
Hey.
What's
okay,
your question, Peachy?
My question is, I've read several times in his column that he started out in Clarksdale, where I'm from, and I was wondering who was the editor of the paper when he was at the Clarksdale Press Register.
The owner was a guy named Ellis, Joe Ellis, and the managing editor was a guy named Harry. Oh hell, I forget his last name. But I worked summers there. My dad got transferred from Baton Rouge to Clarksdale, and the Press Register was a really good paper. It was daily. Small paper, but and it was really great experience because I was doing summer replacement. Like I could be sports editor for a couple weeks and then society editor for a couple weeks. And, you know, they're all kind of stars. Had a great time.
Don in Lafayette. Don, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Smiley Anders. Hello, Don. Don, you were on the air. Good morning to you. Okay, let's go to another caller. Let's try Mike in Villa Del Rey. Mike, you're on with Smiley Anders. Mike, good morning.
Yes, I've got a question for Mr. Anders. How the heck are you so nice just to everybody? I don't know how you do it.
All right, Smiley is a man who is not known to get in fistic encounters on the streets when he's mingling or at bar rooms where those kinds of things sometimes happen. Yeah. Everybody loves Smiley. Nobody even though you're the champ, nobody wants to take you on.
I don't know. Everybody's got a good side, and I try to look for the good in people, and it's usually something. There are very few people that are just have to give up on. But once in a while, I'll get a letter from somebody who's griping about something. They want to get into politics or race relations or something. And that's not really my beat. I mean, I've got views, of course, but our college's not the place there. But I know everybody's pretty decent, all mm-hmm. in all.
41 years and now one day as the six-day-a-week editorial writer, front page of Section B of The Advocate, the newspaper of record in Louisiana, Baton Rouge, New Orleans, Lafayette. It is the newspaper that has survived all the changes in the print world and in the media world. Smiley Anders has been a constant. And one of the constants that a listener notes, and this has happened a few times when you've been on the show, is that you... In most years, almost all the years as a professional journalist, have been in the Gridiron Show, and unlike others, when Smiley appears, he goes shirtless. So Smiley Anders, how did that tradition begin?
Well, they like to get a little sex appeal into the show for the ladies, and so they've had me take my shirt off, and I've been in my underwear several times, been in drag a bunch. And but I've had to scale down a lot of activities, having some breathing problems, and it's kind of hooked up to an oxygen generator now, so it's a little awkward for me to get on the stage. So I've kind of hung it up with Gridiron, which I hated to. I enjoyed it from 73 to just a couple of years ago.
And then you made a comeback a few years ago, didn't you, for one brief shining moment?
They had me on just to do a... cameo, I guess you could call it. But, we've been great. Ronnie Stoops does such a great job directing. And as you can imagine, it's like herding cats. Because everybody's got deadlines. And, the legislature's usually fixing to start its hell right before the opening of the legislature. And so everybody's busy and everybody's you know, it's a couple hours a night for 2 weeks, which doesn't sound like much, but, you know, when you're working on dental land, it can be hard to adjust it. So Ronnie somehow keeps it together. I don't know how he does it.
He's been a constant as well, and longest gridiron show in the country, I believe, is the one by the Baton Rouge gang.
He always have something.
Mostly PR people now, very few journalists.
The PR, TV people love it because they're all hams anyhow, you know, and they get to be us. We just used to get a lot of TV people, too. I'm not sure how the cast is going these days. I haven't really kept up with it the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Now, Smiley has never been wary of showing his midsection on stage in front of the most prominent people in the state. And hopefully somebody will continue that tradition. But a listener asked about the president's physical, which I've been talking about. It's finally been released, 6'3", 244. Now, Joe Burrow is 6'3". We know he's 6'3" because the NFL scouting combine measured him, and they don't make mistakes. And if you look at those photos of Burrow and Trump together when LSU visited the White House, Burrow towers over the president of the United States. And I just have a feeling, Smiley, that the president may weigh a bit more than 244 pounds.
Well, gee, if you can't believe Trump, who can you believe, you know?
T-Bob, welcome back. Calling from Panama City. Go, T-Bob.
It's good to be back, but I'm going to be very short because I actually want to hear Smiley and the other writers and listeners. When I 1970, I stepped onto LSU campus. I was so scared you wouldn't believe. There was only a couple of upperclassmen who would give a freshman the time of day. One of them was by the name of Smiley Anders, and he was a graduate student who was walking on the halls of LSU Journalism School, and I'll be doggone. He is an instigator. In fact, his column the other day had Walker Percy's name in it, and it reminded me the first three I interviewed were Walker Percy, Ramey Pruitt, and Arthur Riopel. But by doing that, he gets some wonderful comments, and every day I check in with the Morning Advocate, Smiley, and also the Morning Advocate Sports. Believe it or not, we all like sports. God bless you, Smiley.
All right, Smiley, I'm sure, appreciates the words from T-Bob Taylor, who's often quoted in Smiley's column. Smiley does have some regulars, and he goes through thousands of emails, even some letters. Some people even send letters to Smiley like the old days. We'll talk a bit more with him. Also hear from Hal Wirt, curator of a major new exhibit at the Old State Capitol. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services, 877-217-5757. In a few moments, we'll hear from Hal Wirt, who has a major exhibit at the Old State Capitol. But we're continuing for a few more minutes with Smiley Gray Anders, Jr., the venerable columnist, one of the great writers in America, member of the LSU Manship School of Hall of Fame, Journalism Hall of Fame. Now, Smiley, a listener asked, were you editor of the Reveille?
Yes, I was in 59, spring, the spring semester of 1959. And I graduated and then went back to graduate school and edited a special edition on the 100th anniversary of LSU. It was a 100-page paper. Hmm. At that time, it was the largest college paper that had ever been printed. Some school in the Midwest, Wisconsin, or somewhere later on had a bigger paper, but it was fun. It really was. We had a lot of people worked on it for a whole year, you know, and it was really, really cool to do that too. So I went to grad school and went to Shreveport and came back and eventually got my master's. I've had fun.
Yeah, it's been a good life for Smiley, and he's brightened our lives with his great talent, immense talent, and goodwill, and a man about town. And someday I suspect there will be a street in your honor in Baton Rouge, but let's hope that happens a long time from now because it'll probably mean you're dead and gone. And Smiley's got some gas in the tank, as they say. Now, you grew up, born 1937.
Yeah.
It was a Great Depression, and then right before World War II. You've seen some stuff along the way, and now we're in a time that is somewhat comparable to other times in the pain that is being inflicted on the people of the world. How do you view it as a man who is, as they say, seen it all?
Well, it's you have to just kind of hope for the best. I mean, I've seen racial turmoil for. I mean, I was raised in a racist community, and I've seen segregation. And one time, the legislature was virtually all segregationists and white men, and that was it. And so, I've seen some improvement over the years. So you just have to. It's been incremental, but we are getting better. I think we could use some better leadership, at the national level, but without really getting into politics. But I think that's coming, and so I think it's going to be better after, I think later in the year we get rid of the virus and football season starts, and maybe we get back to normal. Or abnormal in the case of Louisiana.
Well, Smiley, it is always a pleasure, and is our tradition. We hope to catch up with you around November 20th, his birthday. Be number 83 for this fine gentleman, and I'm honored to share the microphone with you.
That sounds old, doesn't it? Gee whiz.
Well, you sound like you'd be perfect to run for president of the United States right now.
Yeah.
These other guys are just a little too young. Biden would be 78, Trump 74. They're too young for the job.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, just kids.
That's right. Thank you, Smiley. God bless you.
All right.
Take care. Best to you and Lady Catherine.
Okay.
We're joined now by Hal Wirt, and he is a professor of note at the Kansas City Art Institute. He's been collecting posters since he was a teenager and interested in graphic design, and he is the curator of an exhibit at the Old State Capitol, Sign of the Times, the Great American Political Poster, 1844 to 2012. That's a lot of time, 176 years, 78 years. What's your take, 168 years, Matt says. Okay, all right. What's your take on the great exhibit you have that does cover more than a century and a half, Dr. Wirt? This is something I know you take immense pride in.
Well, Jim, it's an honor to be on your show this morning. I'm always enthused to talk about posters. But yes, it was really difficult to make a selection. And we had part of the problem, I think, was that we had a lot of material, but we could only have 50 in the show. And it took about 3 years to put the show together. One of the things that's unique about the show is that some of the early posters we couldn't get loaned to us from various museums because the show was going to be out for 5 years. Now it's going to be extended and it'll end up being out for 8 years. So we had to do some really careful reproductions on those early color posters. So we found that in the National Archives and in other museums, the very best high-colored ones that we could, and then did a research project to duplicate the paper as closely as we could. And then we had them beautifully printed. But other than that, most of them are originals from my collection.
And it's showing until June 20th at the Old State Capitol, opened on the 15th of May. And when I look at some of these posters, like the one America, Reagan Country, from which campaign was that?
That's from the first Reagan campaign.
First for president?
Yeah, I'll tell you what I like about that poster is that the almost subliminal in the background are all the particular images. One of the things we tried to do is be representative of the best posters and then be as fair as we could between Republicans and Democrats. There's a tendency on political posters for the better ones to come from the left. You know, the rule after the McGovern campaign was, or after the McCarthy campaign in 1968, if you had great graphic posters, you'd lose. And so the exception to that, then followed by McGovern, but the exception to that, of course, was the Obama campaign in 2008, which is probably the largest deluge of political posters ever produced.
I see one that says, "Let's clean house with Ike and Dick," and we're talking about Dwight Eisenhower and Richard Nixon, and cleaning house would mean throwing out Harry Truman, throwing out the legacy of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, now regarded both as great presidents. So is Eisenhower, by the way, but people often want change.
They do, and that's a 1952 poster, pretty clever one. What I like about it, too, is that it's floating heads, and I've always loved floating heads posters. Nobody's quite sure where they ever came from, probably done by jobbers when posters were made, but the first floating head poster was for Taft in 1908, and then they disappeared. And starting in the 50s and then into the early 60s, they became one of the most popular political posters. But it's interesting, too, that Eisenhower, Clean House, Eisenhower and Nixon never opposed most of the legislation that was passed by the New Deal. That's why Barry Goldwater and the right-wing Republicans were always so upset with the two of them that they were willing to accommodate that and move forward.
And you have a poster from Goldwater in 64.
And also it's a floating head, too.
Kennedy and Johnson in 1960. Yes. I was talking this morning to somebody about that 1960 race and the 61 inaugural. There was Kennedy looking spectacular, and he had the great resume, too, Pulitzer Prize winner, war hero. And he could give a speech, as we know, look Hollywood handsome. He was 43 years old. And then you got Lyndon Johnson, who was 52 and looked 82.
He did. That's a real compromise. You know, they never liked each other. There was warfare there between those two factions. But in fact, and of course, the 60 election probably came down to Cook County, Illinois.
That's what they say. But Kennedy would have still won the election.
He would have.
Had he lost Illinois, now he would have lost the popular vote. But
yes,
as we know, there have been two presidents in modern time who lost the popular vote, George W. Bush and Donald John Trump, who not only lost it was really a rout by Hillary Clinton, 2.9 million votes, and yet he is the president. Here's a guy who grew up in Little Rock, Eldridge Cleaver, he was a Black Panther, but people forget he also ran for president of the United States, and you have the poster.
He did. I would have liked to include more of the third-party posters there to demonstrate that often in elections there's some choice. They're not going to win, but if you really want a protest vote. And, you know, the problem with third parties in America, there are always efforts to build them, but usually one of the major parties will pick up the central ideas, and they tend to be one or two issue campaigns. And so they're easy to be co-opted, and that's one of the reasons why.
And then there was Williams Jennings Bryan. This is 1900. He was a guy who didn't win but made an impression.
He did. He ran for president three times, and he represented he's a populist, and he represented that populist movement coming out of the 1880s and 90s. And then he gave that fantastic speech to the Democratic Convention in 1896, where at the end he imitated Christ and brought down his hands like it was a crown of thorns on his head and said, "Do not bring down this thorn of crown of gold upon America." And the Democratic Convention went wild. I think he was 36, 37 when he got that nomination. The wonderful thing about those posters, that's the color revolution. And what had happened is color prints were extremely, under chromolithography, were expensive to print, and they had to be run through the press each time for each color, and it was hard to control how they looked.
Well, the exhibit is showing through June 20th at the Old State Capitol. Mary DeRusso there in charge, and Hal Word is a curator. Thanks, Hal. Monday, the mayor. Tuesday, Roger Stone. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services is our signature sponsor. Thank you for listening. Have a great weekend, and stay tuned.